what I started last week. I called the shiur, Rabbi, may I use the Shulchan Aruch? Because I'm discussing the proponents and opponents of codes throughout Jewish history. So just a quick, a quick review of the definition of a code, because someone asked last week how to define it, and it was a fair question. So I think now that I've had a second, I'll give you a real definition. So dictionary defines a code as a systematic collection of laws or regulations or a set of conventions governing behavior or activity in a particular sphere. So I think in terms of what we're concerned with, I think that sort of helps us define what a code is for our purposes, that a code is systematic, it sets to sort of define conduct. And when we think of codes as in distinction to other types of literature when it comes to law. So first of all, the Gemara is not so clear-cut. It has discussion. Sometimes it's clear about what the halacha is. Sometimes we know what the halacha is based on Masora for how we paskin. And of course, the Gemara is not just law in and of itself anyway. And there's another type of literature we have called tshuvos, or both written and oral tshuvos, where you ask a posek and they give the answer, but they're responding to a particular situation, whereas a code is trying to sort of set the parameters on a much larger scale. So just to review a little bit just from last week, for those who weren't here, and just to remind us of where we're at. So in theory, of course, there's Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebaalpeh. The Torah Shebichtav is our Chumash, and Halacha outside of that was not supposed to be written down in any sort of permanent state. There is not supposed to be any sort of art scroll or anything. No Rambam, no Shulchan Aruch. But we saw how we thought there was a concern that Torah would be lost, so the Mishnah was compiled. But then, as I just mentioned, the Gemara, of course, sort of expands and sort of does not go according to that style of the Mishnah. It's not as clear-cut and systematic. And then we talked a little bit about the Rif, who cut down the give and take and just really went to conclusions and only really talked about worked on practical sechtot, and that's what they learned in a lot of yeshivas. They just learned the Rif. We talked about the Rambam, who of course is famous for his magnum opus, the Mishnah Torah, where he tries to give what could be considered all Torah Shebaalpeh in one book. Really only citing one opinion, writing it very clearly. He had his detractors. Mentioned briefly the Tur, who also felt like there was a void for a clear-cut halacha, but he brought more opinions than the Rambam brought, and also focused really more on practical areas. The Rambam talked about both practical and non-practical areas. He talks about everything. So Kachim Taras he also discusses. And where we left off was with the Beis Yosef and the Darkei Moshe. Beis Yosef was written by Rabbi Joseph Caro, who we know of also being the author of Shulchan Aruch, so we'll get there in a second. But the motivation for the Beis Yosef for writing his work was that there was too much out there, and there wasn't enough unification. There wasn't enough unification, So he felt like everything needed to sort of be compiled into one place. The state of exile in all these, both the Rambam, the Torah, Shulchan Aruch, they're also concerned about the effects of exile, both on the ability to learn and master material, but also sort of the effects of the lack of centrality in Pesach. So the Beis Yosef, in some ways, writes an encyclopedia of halacha up until that point, Gemaras and the Rishonim. And then he has his methodology for how to paskin. The Darkei Moshe, Rabbi Moshe Isserles, who lived in Krakow, so he was thinking of doing a similar thing as Beit Yosef. Then he realized that Beit Yosef had already come out. But what he decided was that there were a few areas in which the Beit Yosef fell short. Number one, it was too long. Number two, it didn't take into account common practice or for the Ashkenazim in particular. And number three, in a similar vein, he didn't include some of the later halachic works, particularly Ashkenazim, but the whole principle of halachic kibbutzrei as opposed to paskening according to the Rif and the Rosh and Rambam, which is what the Beis Yosef did. So that's basically what we're up to right now. Okay, so we have this work called the Base Yosef, and Dark Aim Moshe sort of goes along with that. That Herbie, you have part two? Or is that part one? Okay, so here's part two. Okay, so let's look at the introduction to the... pass it down also. Thank you. So let's talk about the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so I left you with a little bit with a cliffhanger because we know that Ricardo didn't stop with Beit Yosef. He writes the Shulchan Aruch. So in some senses, they're sort of opposite ends because Beit Yosef was fairly long and the Shulchan Aruch is fairly short. So what motivated him? So he says, Ra'iti ani bilibi ki tov yokot shel shnei sfirei amara bedech tzara b'lashon tzach b'kolel yafeh v'nayim. So he wants to collect everything and write it in a very clear and concise fashion. The Manti Torah Hashem Tmima Shgura b'fi kol ish Yisrael. So everybody knows it well. Ki kasher yishalu talmud chacham dvar halacha lo'im gam gemba. So A, he wants everything to be very clear because Beis Yosef, so you know, you can work your way through it, but it's not going to get you necessarily the clear answers. But he wanted to sort of make it much more accessible. But what's interesting here is first is that he talks about the importance of it for Talmud Chacham. That in theory, someone who's a rabbi will have learned his Beis Yosef, or in general will have learned the sources. And then the Shulchan Aruch is sort of a handbook that summarizes it and allows the rabbi to have a summary and to be able to recall what he's learned in the correct psak. Okay, but right. So that's an interesting distinction between
the generation of what? Rabbis. That,
what?
Can you imagine the generation of rabbis when it actually came out?
I mean, how handy it was, right? Yeah, absolutely. And that was the Dark Emotion's motivation for writing it also, for when he originally wanted to write something like the Beis Yosef, is that in general he felt like he needed something to help him be able to, when he was asked the question, just to be able to recall the answer. Okay, so before the Shulchan Aruch was several volumes and you had commentaries upon commentaries, it was actually not quite that long of a work. Could probably fit in a book, one volume, maybe two volumes. Okay, so the idea was that that every single month, right, if you learned however many halachas a day, so you'd be able to review the whole thing in a month or two. But then he adds, "Zos ve'ot ha'tamid ha'ktanim yegu bo tamid v'shanenu l'shonom al peh v'tia girsa d'yanakusa mesuderes v'fim b'ktanusam halacha l'maizeh." So he also does have an ideal that not just rabbis will know halacha, but also young children who are learning will be able to, before they have the capability of sorting through the whole sea of the Talmud and its commentaries, will be able to learn everything in a very clear fashion. Karasi Shem Sefer Ze Shulchan Aruch Kibo Yimza Hawagah Kol Mi Name Atamim Aruchim Lekov Shmurim Sturim Uvurim. So
why
he wanted.
Didn't the Sefer Chinuch already serve that purpose?
What?
Why didn't the Sefer Chinuch already serve that purpose?
So you might have said that in my head, but the Sefer Chinuch does discuss halacha, but it's not just what is. It's systematic according to Tariq Mitzvot, but again, not fully focused on practical halacha, not even just focused on halacha. But the Sefer Chinuch is, and for many halachic authorities, is a source. And you're right that the idea behind the Sefer Chinuch was for something for the kids to learn. But this takes a step 300 years or so before Shulchan Aruch. Right. So, okay. So he calls it the Shulchan Aruch, the set table. So I should note that we'll see a lot of word plays on food here, right? So the Beis Yosef itself, in some ways, is a word play on food, because the Beis Yosef, when Yosef in Egypt collected all the food into the storehouses, right? So that's what the Beis Yosef was doing. He was collecting all the sources. And now he's setting the table for everybody. Okay, so that's what he wants to do. He wants it to be a set table. Everybody can come and just come and eat from it. Then comes Ramosha Isserlis. He had already written Dark Aim Moshe. And in theory, the Dark Aim Moshe did what he thought was helpful at the time for Beis Yosef, but he realizes that there's more work to do. He says, "Banti acharav lifros mapa al shulchan aruch shechiber alehem ko pri megadim matamim asheri hafadam." So again, we see he's going on the food theme here, right? That the shulchan aruch's at the table, but he didn't put a tablecloth. So who's gonna come to a nice meal where there's no tablecloth? Okay, but that's the idea, is that in the shulchan aruch, it seems like already did a lot of good work, because he's not tearing it down and starting over. He says that there's some things that need to be added. People from my land are going to come to this feast if I don't put the tablecloth on, because he didn't discuss the Ashkenazi positions, which again we saw in Darkei Moshe.
Okay,
so in some ways he's criticizing the idea that the Shulchan itself was totally aruch by this one person, because everyone's now going to think that it's Torah Misinai. And whatever Shulchan Aruch says, that's exactly how it's always been and how it always will be. And people who are learning it won't get the nuances of how the halacha developed and how what the Shulchan Aruch wrote is not necessarily relevant in every locale. Okay, in Ra'isi L'chtov Das Achroni Memakamos Sholo Hayun Yirim Li Tvarav Tzido Kedei Lare HaTamidim Mechol Makom Sheyidu Sheyish Machlokes Tvarav Chol Makom Sheyadati Sheyena Min Hak Tvarav Achakrev Vamzeyu L'chtov Hakri Nahuk Tzido Asim. So basically what he's saying is that any place where also again part of it is just the tribe of who Rav Kara didn't include, but it's also the chronology that some of the latest Sifrei Halacha were not included in his work. So the Ramah wants to include them also, and he's going to write a gloss and say right on the side and say this is what the practice is when he disagrees. But then he adds a very interesting caveat, because up until now it seems like the Ramah is pretty much on board with the Shulchan Aruch. He's not concerned with the fact that it went from being such a long Beis Yosef to a much shorter Shulchan Aruch. But nonetheless, he says, "Mishi yesh lo chech litom yavchin hamatami b'tameihom be'atz v'voleis mach al acherim." Mishi lo giel lemadrigos lo yazuz mina b'tameihom. On the one hand, if you have the capability of learning all the sources in their original form, so you should do that. Okay, so that's already we're getting that sort of in this case an internal critique, but we're already getting that pushback that the fact that the Shulchan Aruch exists, it might be useful on some levels, does not negate the fact that it shouldn't be a shortcut for learning the halacha properly. If you're not able to do that, either for whatever reason, okay, fine, so rely on the Shulchan Aruch and make sure you know both the Shulchan Aruch and the Masseh, and you should go according to local custom and practice, but if you're able to, you should not rely on others. Okay, so this theme is going to reverberate a little bit in some of the coming critiques of the Shulchan Aruch. One thing I just want to point out that's interesting in terms of the Ramah's critique about the lack of Ashkenazi presence is that when it comes to, if you look at the Nosei Kalim, if you look at the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, so for the most part they're going to be Ashkenazi. And so Ramosh Aluchimsin points out that at a certain point Sephardim weren't interested in commenting on the Shulchan Aruch because Shulchan Aruch in some ways was based on the Rambam. So at that point the Sephardi Psak has already been sort of solidified and well represented. But it's the Ashkenazim who kind of have to come and find their place and find the proper practice. So this whole, the notion that Ashkenazi practice wasn't sufficiently represented is an issue that goes on for quite a long time. So at this point, obviously, which one at the end of the day, Shulchan Aruch or the Beit Yosef?
What's the question?
Which Rav Kara wrote two works, the Beit Yosef or Shulchan Aruch? Which one sort of won, so to speak? Right. So in theory, when he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, he didn't necessarily stipulate that, well, this work is really replacing my previous work. He didn't mean to negate it per se, but obviously given the brevity and accessibility of the Shulchan Aruch, the more people were learning Shulchan Aruch, and whatever was, there are times where the Shulchan Aruch seems to not be quite in sync with what he writes in the Beis Yosef, but I've seen it happen on a couple of occasions, but the Shulchan Aruch seems to have the final word. Okay. So now let's get into a little bit of pushback. Okay, so the biggest pushback to the Shulchan Aruch is going to come from the Yamshel Shlomo, Rav Shlomo Luria. Shlomo Luria was a contemporary of the Shulchan Aruch, so of course, if someone wrote what the Yamshel Shlomo said 300 years later, so people probably wouldn't take him seriously. They might even think that he's a heretic. But the way controversies often work is that the battles are fought at the time. We try to do something new, so somebody's going to push back. And then, depending on sort of the substance and the whatever factors go into the argument, so, I mean, in this case, the Shulchan Aruch obviously is around to stay. But nonetheless, at the time, Rav Shlomo Luria thought that he had some very good reasons to sort of resist the spread of the Shulchan Aruch. So I'm not going to read everything that he says inside. Truth is, I don't think the quotes that I took fully capture it. I think if we were doing another one of two shirim, I would probably almost do the whole thing inside. But basically, the Yom Shel Shlomo is a commentary on the Talmud, and in both his introductions to Bava Kamma and Chulin, Maharshal, the Rav Shlomo Luria, the introductions are almost identical. But he explains his reticence with the Shulchan Aruch. Number one, the whole idea of Torah Shebaal Peh was that not everything could be possibly written down. You can't discuss every permutation of every case. It would be endless. Right? And once whatever is written is going to inspire even more questions and permutations. So it never ends. So therefore, you can't have a final word. It's never going to be, you're never going to sufficiently address a topic of that sense. So that's right. And so he probably preferred that on some level. Right. So he probably preferred that over to code. Exactly. Another issue is sort of the tribal nature of the way codes in general become, because his words, Kol cha borei chalo ve'am ve'al kirshono ve'sever Torah yirusha hil mishpachos v'lozo ha'derech v'lozo he'ir. Okay, so the Shulchan Aruch, especially, so you have the Rambam and the Ramah. So a person could say, well, I'm the Ramah's team, so I'm going to do exactly like him, or I'm on the Shulchan Aruch team, so I'm going to do exactly like him. And the Maharshal says, no, that's not how it works. You have to look at each case based on, and you have to start from the Gemara, and you have to work through the various proofs, and whatever the best arguments are should win. It shouldn't be based on just, you know, what tribe or what team you're on. And of course also, some, you know, you run into issues also in terms of how sources are represented. Anytime, in theory, if we're responsible, this is not just true in halacha, but anything. So whenever something's quoted, so looking up the source often can give you a little bit of background that you don't necessarily get from the quote itself. So he's very much in favor of an approach of really learning the Gemara and all the Rishonim, and whoever has the best proofs, so they're the best ones. So in the introduction of Bava Kamma, he doesn't attack the Shulchan Aruch by name, although it's clear that's what he's talking about. He's not a fan of the Rambam for the reasons that we mentioned last time, that he didn't bring proofs for his he didn't bring any proofs to what he said, and the fact that he just tried to sort of bring one opinion, so Marshall didn't like that at all. So that's some of his critique. But in the introduction of Chulin, which I brought in the fourth source, so he specifically speaks out against the Shulchan Aruch. And here, actually, it's interesting because he does sort of seem to insinuate that he does sort of go by Ashkenazic practice, right? Which is Shulchan Aruch, meaning Marshall does go by Ashkenazic practice, which the Shulchan Aruch doesn't. But so he's upset about that, like the Ramah. He also just, in general, doesn't like his approach of taking from the Rosh Rambam and the Rosh, which also has been previously critiqued. So in general, Marshall is not a fan of this whole codification process. It's not the right way to do things. You know, each case should be taken on its own merit. Okay, so that's very much in a nutshell, probably oversimplifying a little bit what the Marshall said. And he provides some of the greatest pushback, perhaps, against the Shulchan Aruch. Another contemporary of both the Marshall and the Mechaber and the Ramah was Rabbi Mordechai Yaffe. He's the author of a sefer called The Levush. So he has his own issues with the whole Beis Yosef Shulchan Aruch problem. Not against it necessarily on principled grounds the way the Marshal was, but read this aside, because I think this whole give and take that he has is very fascinating. He says, So, first, he's talking about the Beis Yosef. He says it's a great idea because it's going to shorten the halachic. It's going to truncate the halachic corpus a little bit, and that's very much needed. L'rochav yitpashil sichu harav la'yein bo b'nikla krok hu tzara v'al lanu ha'aniyim ha'avyonim b'tora alay ruchav ruchahi. So, you know, on one hand, he was very excited about the project of Beis Yosef, and then he realized that it's still too long. It might have been comparatively short, but for people who aren't as able to learn with a great depth and diligence, it's still too long. As the Marty Lechli Bikva Verasham Li Kitzar Dinim Al Pias Kamato Shekasa Vashayin Shal Shosha Mudi Harazal As Berim B'Tamim V'Dame B'Kitzar Shev Shar V'Zeh Echelu Lasos. So then, Lulush says, I'm going to start writing something. I'm going to write something shorter. I'll try to explain the reasons, but it's still going to be shorter than Beis Yosef. And then, you know, fast forward 10 years later, he says, Shamati Echar Rav Mashbir Ba'atzvi Yisrael Zeh Ha'inyan Hamoel V'Gam Kasav L'Eretz Yitali L'mat Pisi Masher Sham L'Ritzono Lishloch Kitzar Misifra Gadol L'Hadpis V'Hu Sarkra'o Shulchan Aruch As Amachti Mashachti Adim Imlachti Zos V'Amarti B'Shem Shekibalti Sechar Risha Akabel Sechar Risha. So then he hears about the Shulchan Aruch and says, oh great, he wrote something much shorter. So I started writing, but it's okay, I'll rely on him. I don't need to write anything anymore. We'll talk about Google. Right, Isi ki katzar ksara yado bo me'od lo yispi klal l'mayinim. So then he writes, well, actually, Shulchan Aruch was too short. Ki kar'u bo ke kore b'sefer ha'chatum ha'chatum bo lo pitron v'yichlu Haya hakol halach l'moshe misinai b'li shum tam. So then he realizes that the Shulchan Aruch is too short because, like the Ramban said, it's halach l'moshe misinai, and that's what people will think about it, and that's not correct. There needs to be some sort of sense that there's been some sort of evolution and disputes within a halacha. So and he also notes the issue of how Ashkenazic practice isn't represented. And then he says, "V'tokach be'or yosi be'venetia yatsa kol b'machane ha'ivim ki anani mori v'rabbi Moshe harab Moshe Israelis b'kiel kadosha Krakow nisora al haderech haya asher b'charti li kanir li levar kol mina ge'aretzos hanal." So he realizes, well, my concern is that Ashkenazic practice isn't represented. Oh, so look, the Ramah was the Levush's teacher, right? So he realizes, oh, the Ramah's writing something. So then he says, I don't have to write anymore. But then he realizes that while the Ramah might have represented Ashkenazic practice, it's still too short. So then he realized he still had to write. So I'm just going to skip to the very last line here on page 4. V'yez sifri ze kedav rav mutza ben shtei haktavos. So what does Lavush do? He wants to write something that's a golden mean between the two books. On the one hand, Beis Yosef is too long, Shulchan Aruch is too short. So he wants to write something in the middle that's short enough, but also captures some of the different disputes and the reasons for the halacha. That way a person can practice in a more informed fashion. Okay, so again, not a principled stance as much against the Shulchan Aruch, but more just sort of like practically he didn't feel like that a certain void had been filled. Another somewhat contemporary critique of the Shulchan Aruch on some level, again, this is not opposition to the Shulchan Aruch per se, but a little bit of pushback comes from the Bach, Rabbi Yoel Sirkis. So, based on the dates, the Bach was born about 15 years before the Shulchan Aruch dies, so they're not quite contemporaries, but at the same time, you get this, it's still contemporary enough that there was still probably discussion about the proper usage of the Shulchan Aruch. So he writes a very short tshuva here, where he says, "Kayer data she'osan she'nimshach l'aros ha'raz al pi Shulchan Aruch hem amarim b'tor shelo kahalofa. Ki lo yadu shoya shel harav mibetin miyatsu hapsakim vodim tamam b'liban v'adei kach marbi machlokas b'Yisrael." So, he doesn't say that you shouldn't learn the Shulchan Aruch, or they shouldn't use it as a guide, but his problem is that people are starting to use it as a way of paskening. Right? If I have a question, I'll look it up in Shulchan Aruch, and then I'll tell people what to do based on the Shulchan Aruch. He says, that's not proper, because you don't understand where the halacha is coming from in that sense. Rav Soloveitchik also, when he gave the chinas to guys in YU, so he realized that a lot of times that the smicha students knew the halacha, but they didn't really understand why. So at some level, apparently, that's why he started teaching Yeridea, because he wanted the curriculum to sort of reflect that need to understand the reasons. But But that's a pushback of the Bach. And we saw before, in the first year, at the very beginning, I quoted someone who met Amaretz, who said, now that Shulchan Aruch, I don't need a rabbi anymore. The Bach will say, no, just because the Shulchan Aruch exists doesn't mean that you don't need a rabbi. It doesn't mean that you can do it with rabbinic authority. It's helpful, but it doesn't replace everything.
I need your email.
Right, yeah. Yeah, agreed.
We need your email address.
If anybody's at my email address, then I ask my shilas to greater people than myself anyway.
That's the whole
reason. Right, tell what?
For the general, not for a rough developer, consult the kitzesh, for the general public.
Right.
The other, all these other sfarim, really a general public, not really
tuned
to go open
up the safer,
look up the law and say, I'm
asking,
they'll go to a
rough. Right, yeah. So the purpose of such a safer would be so that you can get a general understanding of halacha, and then you can know which I was asked. But I'll come back to the kitzer in a minute. Another work that functions a little bit like the Levush in a certain sense is the Chaya Adam. Hershel Schechter likes to say that before Mishnah Brura, people used to learn Chaya Adam in order to learn Halacha. So he talks about how the authors of the Shulchan Aruch, they set the table again, the whole food theme there. But he says, "Mikol makom inanu pel lechol ve'anos mehem." We can't eat from it. We can't enjoy from it because on the one hand, the Beis Yosef is too long. On the other hand, Shulchan Aruch is too short. Okay, so you can use it as a review guide, but Zemeholam lo alah das Beis Yosef or Amal lisok alach al ma'aseh min Shulchan Aruch. This claim is that they never ever intended that you would use a Shulchan Aruch to paskin. It was just meant to review, to maybe get a grounding, but not to paskin. But on the other hand, Beis Yosef. It's too long. Even the Taz is too long. And the Magen Avraham, but I feel involved Sefer HaLevush. Remember, the Levush was trying to create some sort of happy medium. That doesn't work for the Chaya Adam. Shumatok lechech, it's very sweet, but it's too long. And the burdens, and this is where again the sort of the themes of being in exile, not necessarily just being able to sit to sit and learn, right? But the idea that we actually that there's certain need to work and to make a living. And poverty prevents people from learning after a certain age. So people don't have enough time to be able to learn properly. So he writes this work where he says, even a 15-year-old can, on his own, learn this and have a very good idea of what the halacha is. And the Chaya Adam is more like the Bush in the Shulchan Aruch, in the sense that he explains the rationales and he sort of incorporates different opinions. It's not just a bullet point.
Yeah. Exactly. The rabbi that was learning with us was too new because it was right after the Chaya Adam was from the 1800s.
Right. Shulchan Aruch was still But then he says, "Vaday mishi yada bravlo lilmo makardim mishas apostkin vatur beis Yosef shulchan aruch machronim vaday asur lo lismocha alive and he must hear al zemaot." So even here, on the one hand, he wants to make something acceptable so that people should, in general, have a general grounding in halacha. But on the other hand, if we're able to learn it in depth, you absolutely should, and you should not rely on my work. Okay, so that's the theme that sort of reverberates in some of these works over the couple hundred years of the Shulchan Aruch. Is that they're very careful to say that while there's this necessity for their work, it's not the final word and it's not what you should be relying on. And of course, not to rely on the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so those are some general, the Bush and the Chaya Adam, a couple of works that were written sort of as sequels to the Shulchan Aruch with their varying purposes. We mentioned, of course, the Kitzer Shulchan Aruch. So I'm not aware of any sort of direct pushback against a strong pushback against the Shulchan Aruch, at least in writing, in terms of any in terms of any code set, you know, subsequent works that were written, but it happened to be when I, around the time that I was creating the Shir a year ago, so I was reading a tshuva from Rav Yehuda Herzl Henkin, Shlita, he lives in Yerushalayim. So one of his tshuva, he happens to mention that his grandfather of Yosef Henkin Zatzal, so his concern with a work like Shulchan Aruch, Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, perhaps a little more than the Shulchan Aruch itself, is that Kitzur Shulchan Aruch just presents the dinim, but it doesn't explain what's the raisa, what's the rabbanon, what's a minhag. So even if at the end of the day you have to do everything, but if people say, oh, well, that's just a minhag, so therefore they'll say something that's a iser d'oraita and say, well, that's not really important either, because they don't, without knowing anything else, they don't know how to make the proper distinctions. And then it's sort of, when you're, it's both a problem, it's a problem of l'chomer and l'kulo that, you know, if you're too machmir without explaining where the chomer comes from, so it can lead to a kula of people sort of poo-pooing everything else.
But the argument that it's the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, don't go look at Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't mean go to the regular Shulchan Aruch and go there as the rabbi.
In theory, if that's, that would be proper use of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch.
Right.
But nonetheless, there was a concern that the people who weren't necessarily as dedicated would just sort of, they would hear that something was said that was usher, and they don't realize what the distinctions are. One time I was having a discussion with somebody about minhag and halacha, and he was saying, if you say that a minhag is halacha, so that's baal tosif. So that's not what baal tosif is. It's not what baal tosif is. Baal tosif is, you know, five tzitzis instead of four. That's what baal tosif is. So minhag is incorporated into halacha, right? Kinyos is an example. Already the Chayyadim was talking about kinyos. Is in full force as a mandatory practice, but again, making the distinctions important. So the Bach raises a concern about paskening from the Shulchan Aruch improperly. We fast forward, I guess, to today, really. So we have even more concerns. So first of all, one thing I want to point out is that if the Beis Yosef and the Lavush were already concerned about how there was too much out there to really master, and even the Rambam. Right around the time that the printing press came out, so all the more so with ubiquitous book printing and Google and everything, so there's really a lot out there. And in particular, I would say Google and some of the internet resources can be a particular concern. On the one hand, it might be a good way to sort of figure out what's out there, what Shiloh is maybe to ask. But on the other hand, there's something dangerous about it. Herschel Schechter spoke out about this a couple years ago, responding to a particular controversy, and he notes that with the proliferation of resources like the Bar Ilan database and the Ritzar Chochma, so anybody can look anything up, and without necessarily, you know, actually knowing anything, you can just sort of research it, type it into a search engine, and then you can find the source, and you can decide how to paskin. He says that's not proper. Even if you have a yeshiva background, so, you know, that doesn't necessarily give you a training, you know, if you don't have the shimush of Talmidei Chachamim, so it doesn't necessarily give you the training to paskin properly. I think it's certainly a concern, especially even more so from Bar Ilan. So at least Bar Ilan, you'll look up the sources and figure it out, but with Google, I have that concern a little bit that the fact that, you know, just the fact that anything's out there doesn't necessarily mean that it's the proper practice. Because I think when we think about practice, we'll think back to the Ramah a little bit. So you have to consider what local custom is, and we have to consider what mainstream opinions are, what traditionally has been practiced. So when you just sort of Google or search anything, you just sort of pull out a random source. So it doesn't necessarily give you a sense of what the evolution is and how the halacha has properly evolved over the years.
But even with that online sources, I mean, printed books also. I mean, Art Scroll is obviously an obvious example.
Right. Okay. So I'm going to address Dr. Soloveitchik, and then I'm going to end by with your point. So Dr. Soloveitchik, Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, the son of the Rav, wrote a monumental article 25 years ago called Rupture and Reconstruction. I think that actually someone just wrote an evaluation of it, 25 years since it's been written. Basically what he talks about is, and I think it's apropos to what we're talking about, that, you know, that in some ways halakha is written down, and maybe, and the generation after the Holocaust, so people were learning a bit from written halakha. But he points out that really halakha, well, while obviously written halakha is very important, the way that we actually live our lives is based on tradition, passed down from our parents down to us. Right? Way of life is not learned, it's absorbed. And he started noting how there's all these books, right, all these pamphlets, right, Hilchos Tzitzis, Hilchos Tfilin. A friend of mine posted on Facebook, they saw something called Hilchos Shtreimel recently. I did that, I got a laugh. Right, so there's all these, there's been a big proliferation of these handbooks and pamphlets on all sorts of practical halacha things, and you just, you know, he's not saying criticizing it per se, but he's saying that, but he's noting that that's a little bit of a departure from what used to be practiced. What it used to be was that, you know, you learn the information, called it learn in, right? And the goal was not necessarily to come to the din, but in general to absorb the information, and then maybe, you know, you came to understand the halacha better that way. But this generation, so we don't have the patience to sit and learn everything well. We need it at our fingertips, just like everything in the, you know, everything is very self-contained. So I think
we don't have sulfur nowadays. We have svarim.
Mm-hmm. we have what?
We don't have sulfur. We have svarim nowadays.
Right. Right.
What did he say about Das Torah?
So I think that's a whole other discussion. So I think Dr. Soloveitchik's point is very apropos, and I just want, so this is where I'll end, is that and we mentioned the proliferation of Sfarim in general today. So I think what's important today, what we can learn from all of this, is that it's important to be educated consumers. Right? There's a lot of things out there. You can pull up anything both from the internet and from the bookshelf and read it. And what we have to realize is that does not necessarily reflect our own communal practices. It's not, and the like. It's important to have a relationship with a rabbi or someone who's competent. So, you know, so just when we read something, so we should know where it came from, what its angle is, what authority is. I don't think that these books, and I don't think codes in general, are going away. They obviously serve a purpose. Again, if there was a need for Rambam Shulchan Aruch back in its time, certainly there is today in terms of the proliferation of sources. So they can be very helpful, but nonetheless, we should be careful about what we absorb and make sure that it reflects on how halacha is practiced in our own homes and in our community.